Pity parties and why I hate them. Disclaimer, the information in this article is meant for entertainment purposes only and is in no way meant as a replacement for professional, medical or psychological support. Please seek the appropriate advice from a healthcare professional should you feel it necessary. Why I chose this week's topic. Honestly, I've skirted around writing on this topic because I've strong views on pity parties and I felt it might be too controversial to discuss. However, this week I've been working on smartening up my YouTube channel in anticipation of launching my new podcast. I haven't posted on YouTube properly for a couple of years, so it was interesting to look at the back office and see which of my videos were most popular. And to my surprise, a 2-minute one that I did on pity partying was up there as one of my most watched. So that was reason enough for writing this week's article. You can visit my YouTube channel at the link below, and if you could take a second to subscribe and click the notification button, you'll be among the first to know when my podcast finally goes live. Okay, what is a pity party? A pity party is when someone practices extreme self-pity. To be clear, we can all feel sorry for ourselves occasionally. That's healthy. That's a valid human emotion. However, when it's prolonged and pervasive, that's what I'm referring to when I talk about pity parties and extreme self-pity. We all know someone who does this, and we may even do it ourselves. It's easy to spot somebody in that state. Their shoulders are slumped, their head is hung low, their chin is jutting out with their mouth turned down. Think of how a child might react when you tell them they can't have chocolate just before dinner. They may pout, sulk, and generally act belligerently. That childlike behavior is what's replicated during an adult pity party. Characteristics tend to include having a what's the point attitude, acting and feeling thoroughly defeated, believing that no one cares despite what others tell them. Everything feels hopeless. They struggle to see things from another, more positive perspective. They choose to only look at the negatives. It's them against the world. You'll hear someone in the throes of a pity party saying things like, "Why does this always happen to me? Things never get better. When am I ever going to get a break?" I call it the poor me syndrome. Now, I want to be clear here. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be sad, upset, or annoyed when bad things happen. Of course you should. However, I take exception when people stay in that mode for a prolonged period, using it as an excuse not to take responsibility or affirmative action to solve their problems. Why I hate pity parties. If you follow me for a while, you'll know that I had a difficult childhood. There were significant amounts of abuse and neglect, which I'm now discussing more openly. I'm doing this because I know from working with thousands of people that growing up with emotionally immature parents, even where abuse wasn't present, is more common than you might imagine. Again, no blame here, just facts. If people knew better, they'd do better. In my childhood home, pity parties were a regular occurrence. I would often see my parents in a state of self-pity, and even as a child, I would think, "Ooh, that's not helping. Why don't they do something about it?" It being the current stressful or chaotic situation. I would even go as far as to present them with ways to solve their problems. However, I was always perplexed when they chose to ignore them, seemingly doubling down in their misery. Looking back, some of my solutions may have been naive, but at least I was trying to do something about it and I couldn't understand why my parents weren't. That's why I hate pity parties. The people doing them tend to take no responsibility and assume, with no evidence, that they can't do anything about their situation. In my experience, that's rarely the case. As an adult, a parent even told me, "Stop trying to solve people's problems." By people, they meant them. However, luckily, I've ignored that bit of advice, and as a result, I now help thousands weekly, and I really wouldn't have it any other way. Incidentally, I'm very conscious now that it's unhealthy for a child to be constantly on edge and hyper aware of their parents' problems, let alone trying to solve them. Why we practice extreme self-pity. There are several ways why we do extreme self-pity. Number one, we don't want to accept responsibility. When we're in a pity party state, we tend to blame anyone or anything else other than ourselves for our current circumstances. But of course, in most situations, we've usually played a significant role. However, it's far easier to blame someone else than take responsibility and acknowledge what we could have done differently. It's not a coincidence that there you are every time there's a problem. You are the common denominator. Number two, learned helplessness, learned behavior. As I've written about many times, we learn our behaviors and how, what to think up to the age of 7. We do this by watching and copying our primary caregivers. So if one or both of our parents didn't model emotional maturity, there's a good chance that we won't either. I'll be honest, until I started doing the work, in inverted commas, I would do pity parties too. Understandably, I modeled it from my parents. However, it was only when I realized that the common denominator in all of my problems was me, and that I was the only one that could sort them out, that things finally started to change. Often, learned helplessness can be passed down unwittingly through many generations until someone actively decides to do something different. Just because your parents behave and react in a certain way does not mean that you have to. Number three, we get validation and attention. For many people, there is a significant secondary gain or a subconscious benefit for not solving their problems. As long as they have issues, they get attention and validation from others. Therefore, why the heck would they want a solution? I'm sure you know someone like this. They always have a problem or an issue, and you can give them all the recommendations under the sun for how to solve them, yet they choose to do nothing. That's secondary gain in action. In reality, they don't want your solutions. Instead, they want your attention and validation. So if they do happen to sort out a problem by some chance, you can guarantee there'll be another right behind it. What's next? In the next article, I'll discuss ways of escaping the learned helplessness pity party trap. I'll also cover what to do if a family member or work colleague is a consistent negative influence, what I like to call a mood hoover or energy vampire. Finally, if you haven't subscribed to receive my weekly newsletter, which contains my latest articles, news, and special offers, click the newsletter tab above. And as a thank you, you'll receive free access to my 30-page mini course on how to hack your happy hormones. As always, thank you for your continued support.